I think the first third of the population is that young third of the population that jumps right in. They can't wait. They're going to get to bars. They're going to get to restaurants. They're going to go out. They're going to play ball. They're going to do all the things that they want to do. The second third, I'm calling the reserved third.
Okay.
They're going to watch the actions of the first third. They want to make sure there's no surge in cases. They want to just watch it work for a week or two. And once they get comfortable, then they'll come out. Now we'll have two thirds. The third third, I call the certain third. They're not going out until they're certain that it's okay. Now, they're the older demo. They're also the more affluent demo, which affects retail and stores and all of that. They're going to want to see a vaccine. They're going to want to know that they're completely safe before they go out.
I don't want to share someone else's thoughts. I want to create my own original thoughts. I want to create my own original solutions. I want to look at situations and come up with my own phrasing, my own words, and do it my way.
This is the John Taffer Podcast.
Shut it down.
Hello, hello. Well, I'm John Taffer. This is my podcast. Welcome. It is, I think, day 46 of my quarantine, and I'm hanging in there. I'm actually feeling pretty optimistic. You know what's interesting? I think when we go through something like this, initially we're in shock. Then we move to panic, right? What's going to happen to us? I'm scared. Then we almost move to a deliberation time where, okay, I'm thinking about this. I'm trying to digest this. Maybe I'm not as panicked as I was. Maybe I'm not as freaked out as I was in the beginning. Maybe there's this third phase of almost just accepting it and starting to deal with it on a day-to-day basis. And then I think there's sort of a fourth phase that we go through, which is, okay, now let's start working on getting out of this. And, you know, when you see the attitudes across the country now, people are starting to open up. Right, Wisconsin is starting to open. Georgia is starting to open. Texas is starting to open up. We're starting to see activity around the country. You know, this has given us something to look forward to. And we can all look forward to opening up. Sure, there's going to be social distancing. Sure, things are going to be different. But we're going to get to go out pretty soon. We're going to start to be interacting with each other again pretty soon. And life is going to start to evolve again pretty soon. And we're going to get out of this static place of sitting in our homes to actually being out there. And meeting and contributing and working again. And all this is going to happen. And it is in our future. So I know this has been a rough few weeks for a lot of us. It's been a rough few weeks for me too, guys. I've had moments of panic attacks and fear. I've had moments of complete doubt of where I'm going, where our future is going. I've had incredible fears of, you know, will television shows happen again? Will this happen again? Will that happen again? I've gone through all of the same things that you have. And sure, I'm worried about finances, and I'm worried about all of these things, and I'm worried about my wife, and I'm worried about my daughter, my grandson. I'm worried about my little doggies. I read an article this morning that dogs now can contract the coronavirus. So all of these things worry me. But now at this stage, I seem to be worrying less and focused on doing more. So I've tried to reinvent myself a little. I'm doing much more shows and digital things than I used to do. I'm doing more social media posts. I'm working much harder on my mixology lines and my seltzer lines and the things that I'm doing that aren't television or media related. So I'm making these changes day to day, and some of them are subconscious. But the important thing is, in my own mind, right now, in a small way, yep, I'm still locked in my house. Yep, I'm still inhibited from doing so many things that I want to do. But yet in my own way, in my own mind right now, I'm starting to move along. I'm starting to move to the next phase. I'm starting to understand where the next phase might go. I'm starting to see people come back to work again. Yes, I'm starting to see the restaurant business start to work. Yes, I'm starting to see that people will do curbside and will do deliveries and they will support the industry. And I'm starting to realize, yes, the government stimulus dollars are getting out. And I do know many restaurants that have gotten those dollars. And yes, I know people that are going back to work and they're going to work in places like Walmart or Amazon, or they're going into delivery services when they used to be servers. And yes, I'm starting to see things happen. Sure. Things haven't happened as quickly as we wanted them to. Sure, we were promised testing months ago that didn't happen. Sure, we were promised a number of things that we expected to happen right away. Remember 2 months ago when they said, oh, we'll have testing, you'll drive up, we'll have drive up testing all over the country. Well, I haven't seen it. So there's many, many things that did not happen. No question about it. And we all have reasons to be frustrated. But think about it. There are many things that are happening. I read this morning that a vaccine just finished its first trial and showed a lot of promise. That's really encouraging. I've read a bunch of reports from my medical work and my people around me that there are treatments that are getting very, very effective. And then there's another big fact. As the amount of cases escalate and we're learning so many more people have had COVID-19, that if many, many more people had it, then the percentage of death is much lower than we initially thought. So the numbers are starting to show some good signs. The movement of society is starting to show some good signs. And I think the attitude of America is starting to move towards, let's get this resolved. Let's get back out there. Let's get this solved. And I think all of these changes are making a huge difference in a way we're all starting to feel. So I hope you're feeling some of this positive energy. I hope you're seeing that there is light at the end of this tunnel, because I am truly starting to believe this. I am truly starting to believe that restaurants might do better than we thought a few weeks ago. Retail might do a little better than we thought a few weeks ago. And that people really want to get out. We do want to socialize. And when this starts to happen, I think it's going to happen pretty quickly. So I'm a little optimistic today. And all the reading and all the homework and everything that I've studied says to me that maybe our government hasn't done as much as it could, and maybe things should have happened that didn't. But the fact of the matter is, we as a society are ready to move along, and we will. And we'll do that together. And that's pretty exciting. You know, in all of the years that I've been in a hospitality business, and it's always bothered me, I haven't seen very many female managers in the hospitality industry until these last years. You know, and years ago, I owned a big nightclub in Chicago, and I had a manager who worked for me. Her name was Christy Moore. I'll never forget it. If she's listening, she'll smile. And Christy was one of the first female general managers I ever put in charge of a large nightclub years ago that I owned. And Christy did incredibly well, and I learned then that in a nightclub business, women that could come up in that business and make it to a general manager status had a lot of strengths, because it wasn't an easy climb. And because it might not have been as easy a climb for a male manager back in those years, they were sort of tougher. They were sort of stronger. They had ways of managing teams that was different than men. And I started to realize that every person, whether it's a male, a female, old or younger, everybody brings different assets to that management table, the way they go about things, the way they manage. I found that men manage differently than women sometimes. Older people manage differently than younger people. Different ethnic groups even manage differently. They go about things differently. And people from different countries and different originations also go at management differently. But I can't help it. I've always had a huge amount of respect for that female manager who comes up in a male business and kicks butt. I've always had incredible respect for that. Well, Erica Nardini is the CEO of Barstool Sports. Now, Barstool Sports is worth about $450 million now. It was started by Dave Portnoy back in, I think, 2003. In Boston, it was a betting sheet that he'd hand out in subways. Dave turned it into a pretty amazing entity, and he had Big Cat in Chicago and different Barstool people in all different cities, and it was fragmented all over the country, and they all did their own thing, but they did it under the Barstool banner. And then suddenly an investment company saw some opportunity and invested a bunch of money in a Barstool Sports. And they went out and they interviewed over 70 people to find the right CEO of Barstool Sports. Now, if there's a company that I can think of that's male-oriented, it's Barstool Sports. And I know this because I came from Spike TV, which was incredibly male-oriented at the time. So you'd think that a Barstool Sports, Dave Portnoy, Big Cat, PFT, KFC, all of these guys, if they were to bring a CEO in, you'd almost bet your life on the fact that they would bring a guy in to run Barstool Sports, which is a guy-based media site, media entity. But they didn't. They brought in Erica Nardini. And Erica came from AOL and worked on so many different companies, from Volkswagen to AOL to Microsoft. She was a media monster, and she came in as the CEO of Barstool Sports about 4 years ago. So Erica had to take all these people, fragmented all over the country, bring them into New York City, turn it into a company. She then had to raise capital. She had to put in structure. She had to put in P&Ls. They didn't even exist when she took over. Erica came in, And Dave Portnoy is the face of Barstool, runs the content of Barstool. But behind the scenes, Erica Nardini runs Barstool Sports. A woman runs Barstool Sports. And she's an incredible media genius. And what she's done with this company and the way she's done it and how she's gone about it is an incredible story. So, you know, we've had Dave Portnoy on this podcast. We've had Big Cat on this podcast. I've been on all of their shows, and I go to Barstool every time I'm in New York. These are very, very close friends of mine. So it's really an honor to have Erica Nardini on my podcast today. So when I come back, we're going to talk to Erica not only about Barstool Sports, but she's a sociology major. So let's talk about what's going on in our society. You know, how are we dealing with these crises now? What does it mean to the media business? What does it mean to us? And what does it mean to Barstool? When I come back, I'll be with Erica Nardini.
Don't shut down this podcast. John Taffer will be right back.
Good. How are you, Erica?
I'm good. You hanging in?
I'm hanging in there. You too?
I am. Are you in Vegas?
I'm in Vegas. Where are you in the city?
Good. Are you? Yes.
Yeah. How long have you been in your apartment?
Too fucking long.
I hear you. I think we're on 44 days or something.
Yep.
You're about
we're
to
gonna
say.
We're going to get through it, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot to talk about. So it's my pleasure to have a friend, because we've known each other and worked together for a few years. Erica Nardini is the CEO of Barstool Sports. Now, it's funny, when people think of Barstool Sports, they always think of men, right? And Portnoy and Big Cat and PFT and KFC. And of course, these are all my buddies, because I've spent a lot of... Everybody thinks that Barstool is such a male-oriented company, but it's run by you. And what's amazing to me, Erica, is I did some homework on you these past couple of days. You have quite a history. I mean, you have quite a history. You've won a lot of awards in the media business. You're an extremely successful female CEO. And you know, when I look at the things that you've touched, from Volkswagen to Microsoft to AOL, did you know that this was the industry that you wanted to be in, media?
Yes, I knew the minute the internet, I touched the internet, I always wanted to be in the internet. Like, I found myself there. I always wanted to work in advertising. I didn't get a chance. Like, when I first graduated from college, the ad business was different then. It was more glamorous than it is now. Like, there was more respect. It was more creative. Like, it was cooler than it was now. I used to watch, when I was in high school, this show called 30 something, which you might remember.
Sure.
But all I wanted to do was to work at an ad agency, and I didn't get hired at one. And so I worked at Fidelity. I thought I was going to be a lawyer, and then, you know, like, I made my way through the back door into advertising and really into advertising. And then I got a chance to work in media, and the internet that's where I will always want to work.
And your timing was great, because you came in right in the sweet spot. So you came in at a time when
I was lucky.
The industry was in its infancy. So, when you were with AOL, for example, you were a very instrumental in their marketing department, right? Their channel marketing and such. Mm-hmm. What's different today? When you look at a Barstool, which, you know, has evolved for many, many years, people don't realize Barstool has been in business, 15 years?
Mm-hmm. About 17.
17
Dave
years.
Dave started in 2003, 2004.
Right. And Dave, as you know, is my buddy, and he's been on this podcast. And, you know, Dave tells a story of when he started. It was a betting sheet in Boston, and he used to run down to the subways at 4:30 in the morning to hand them out. And it wasn't easy. He worked his butt off to pull this together. So
I lived in Boston when he created it, and I remember him, and I remember he used to have these models. There would be a fight to go into the T station in Boston, where everyone handing out, like, one paper on a thinner piece of paper than the next guy. And Dave was right there in the mix with everybody else, which was awesome. Like, it was the great way to begin.
How do you stay relevant in this business? I know David has his pizza review, and each of the people that are on your media team, if I can call it that, your entertainers, and They all have their own little niche and their own little audience, but this evolved. I mean, this wasn't Barstool just a few years ago. So how do you manage a media machine like this and build brand equity when there's so many different voices involved in the brand?
Yeah, it's a great question, John. So, you know, one is I think you have to love what you do. You've got to like be honest about, you got to know your shit. You got to know what you're doing. I mean, it's no different for you. Like you're an authority. You keep up on everything. You know everything. You're always talking about it. You're thinking about it. I think people can see through the mailing in of everything. Like, you know, on the internet, there was a time where, you know, kind of like the era of content farms where like content was just created just to like get more money from Google or to get better position in a feed on Facebook. You know, Dave and Dan Katz and Kevin Clancy, like the early Barstool guys, what's interesting about right now and being in this quarantine and with COVID is that, you know, they've gone back to what it was like at the beginning of Barstool, which is really all they had was their brains, access to the newspaper and then the blog. They had Twitter. They didn't have any money. They didn't have any studios. All they had was what they were reading, seeing, their reaction to it and how they shared it back. And I actually think that that's what relevance is, you know, it's being in touch with what's happening. It's being curious about it. It's expressing it in a way that people can connect with and relate to. And then it's keeping that conversation going. And, you know, we've done that in the last, you know, I've been at Barstool now 4 years. When I got to Barstool, we had 3 very early podcasts, and we had the blog. And Twitter. And that was really it. And now, you know, we probably had 5 million uniques. Now we have 100 million uniques. We are on every platform imaginable. Twitch, Snapchat, Twitter, obviously, Instagram, TikTok, radio, video, OTT. Like we're everywhere. But the way we did it was just by taking the people and the personalities and that perspective that they had to begin with and just finding new avenues and new places to put it.
So when Barstool sort of came together, there was Barstool Chicago, Barstool Boston, all these different cities. And, you know, Dan was in Chicago, if I'm not mistaken, Big Cat, and he was doing his thing in Chicago and different, but they were very separate in essence. You know, they were sort of using the same website and the same handle. So yes. Now you come in as CEO, the yes. company gets capitalized, right? An equity deal is done. Suddenly yes. it's a multi-million-dollar company and you've got to yes. take all of these pieces from all over the country. Pull them in and turn them into a cohesive company. Was that yeah. hard?
Yeah, it was hard. I think I've done really not much else besides Barstool in the last 4 years. I mean, they were sick of each other. When they all moved to New York, they were ready to kill each other. They weren't used to being together. Like they, you know, I remember my interview process, I asked Keith Markovich, who's the editor-in-chief, I said, hey, when's... just out of curiosity, like, how often do you talk to Dave? Like, how often do you talk to Dave? And he was like, oh, I think the last time I talked to Dave on the phone was at Christmas when he gave me my bonus. And this was in, you know, May. So they didn't talk to one another. What Dave did, which was actually really brilliant, is he had them on a clock. And he basically was like, every 30 minutes, a blog drops from everyone. And so he was always very much about productivity, and he knew because he was, you know, a young entrepreneur who had nothing but his own brain to build this thing, that frequency mattered. And the more you had to say and the more consistent you were with publishing it, the more audience you would attract, the more engaged that they would be. So, you know, when I came to Barstool, it was funny because, John, that there wasn't a P&L. They didn't know one another. They hadn't physically been together beyond like 2 or 3 of them. There was this whole world of, I couldn't tell if they worked for Barstool or not. So when I first got there in 2016, there were probably 40 people that had Barstool in their social handle and they blogged, but they weren't on the payroll. So I was trying to figure out like, who's on payroll? What do we have here? And then who are all these people on the internet? So And, you know, we didn't have an office. We had to build an office. We had to move everyone together, and everything was a fight. You know, the seating chart was a fight. Who got the studio was a fight. Like, so it's been a wild ride. But mostly everybody wanted to win, and everyone shared this same, you know, we were all in it together, and we all knew that there was, you know, we had a little bit of money at that time. We could make a couple hires that they had never been able to make before. We were getting meetings that would never have otherwise happened. And everyone was really committed to the work ethic in this company is incredible. Like, everyone was committed to try to win. It just was tense because no one knew what winning was or if we could really do it. So it was an insecure time, but an exciting one.
Yeah. And then you had all these different personalities who were used mm-hmm. to operating independently on their own. And yeah. now you had to pull them in yeah. and create a corporate culture, in essence, yeah. which is now yeah. I've been to your office a bunch of times, as you know, and I love it. I never come to New York without going to Barstool. And it's fun for me to watch not only the evolution of the company, because Dave, Dan, and I did Blog Rescue, I think, almost nine yes. years ago now, yes. but to see the offices, then to see the new offices and the move and the studios. And it's an incredible thing to watch as the team comes together. And, you know, it's interesting. You're sort of the unsung hero of Barstool.
And I don't know about that.
Well, let me tell you why. You know, Dave and Dan and Kevin and PFT, they've all done amazing jobs. But you've taken this company and without people even knowing who you are. Right, you're behind the scenes. If you ask people who runs Barstool, Dave, of course, is the name that typically, from behind the scenes, you took these pieces, connected the dots, turned it into a cohesive, functioning media company in New York with serious advertising and stuff. They brought the content. They brought the idea. You really made it into a business in very many ways, didn't you?
That's nice to say. Yeah. You know, we're a real company now, like, yeah. and we're a force. Like, John, it's been such, like, so nice of you to say, like, and it's funny to take a step back and look at it, because we're so close to, you know, the thing that's neat about us is that we're pretty hands-on everything. Like, there's not a whole lot of hierarchy at Barstool. Like, everybody carries the water. And we just set, you know, Dave has this phrase of, like, brick by brick, which is part of the Barstool ethos. And that's really how, you know, I felt like I had a job to do, which was to bring them together, to get people to give us a chance, to hire for the type of roles that I knew could make us bigger, to provide stability and cohesion and a sense of, like, connection and to communicate. And to also push, like, for us to, you know, to push people to go further and do more and try things. And the best part was everyone was just really willing. Like, I think there's a lot of companies where they say they want to grow, or they say they want to evolve, or do something different than they're doing today, but they don't really want to do it. I also think there's a lot of, you know, I give Dave and Dan and all of our guys, but even really actually Dave in particular, a lot of credit, where I also think it's one thing to say you want a CEO and you say you want a partner and you say you want to have someone come in. And it's another thing entirely to let that person be successful. And he and I just clicked. We've always clicked. Like, he's the single best person I've ever worked with. And I think that matters, because I think if there was someone who came in, you know, one of the things he and I were talking about was when the interview process was happening of me coming to Barstool, there were 70 some odd candidates, and 69 of them, or whatever the number is, told him what needed to change. Like, you got to change this, shouldn't be doing that. Like, loaded questions on, like, what about this? And the only person who didn't ask that was me. And because I didn't want them to change. Like, the magic was who they were.
Well, you were a fan at that point, right?
I was. Yeah. Like, I wore the merch. Like, I lived in Boston when he started it. So I think that's partly wise. I never wanted to change them. I just wanted to grow and evolve them and build something that none of us knew what it could be, but we were ready to go have a try at it.
And it's interesting, because you've created a separation, if you will, in that Dave runs content. Mm-hmm. You run the company. right? And it works very, very well. And you complement each other really well. Were they surprised? Were people surprised when they hired a female CEO for Barstool? What was the reaction to that initially?
You know, it was funny. We just did the documentary. So we, if you go watch the Barstool documentary, we've gotten to the point in Barstool history where I show up. And so we were going back on that. And I remember David sent an email out announcing that I was coming, and there were very few email. They didn't really use email at that point ever. And it was like, you know, hey, we have a CEO, gasp. It's a chick. Like, yes, she's a woman. I think people were surprised. I felt like I was the right person for the job. And to be honest with you, like the Barstool people were just, I think, so happy to have somebody come in and like, what the fuck are we doing here? Oh shit, their sanity is on the way. And they were always very welcoming. To be honest, like in our tribe or our company, we don't treat people different. Like you're a woman, you're a guy, like you're this, you're that. Like it's, everyone's so busy on building something that no one even really looks up to think about who you are. I think people outside of the company and, you know, my network had a very different reaction of like, oh my God, like how could you go there and you're a woman and what are they like and all that kind of stuff.
Well, you know, it's interesting. When I met you, I was a little surprised to hear, right, of a female CEO at Barstool based upon my knowledge. And when I met you, it all made sense. It did, because the fact of the matter is, and I hope you take this with the compliment that it's meant, you're a guy's girl.
Oh, totally. I'm basically a dude.
You are a guy's girl. And when I met you and spent time with you, you don't dress like a guy. You dress very much like a girl. But the fact of the matter is, you have this relatability to men and sports and Barstool. So,
I love it. Like, it's actually funny, John, like I'm almost more comfortable with men. I spend so much time with guys at this point. Like it's, and I like what they talk about. I like their humor. And like it's been pretty, that part of it was always really seamless. And we've added a lot of women. So, and you know, that's been awesome too.
Yeah. So let's change topics a little bit.
Okay.
When you went to college, you studied sociology.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you talk about sociology and what's going on right now in our society, boy, this is a study in sociology right now of what's going on. And, you know, you're looking at this as an experienced media CEO. You're looking at this as a female, but with a great male orientation in the world that you're in. You're in a very social business. The people that you're around are social animals and such. Mm-hmm. When you look at everything going on now, as somebody who studied sociology and is right in the middle of our culture, what do you think happens? I mean, I understand that the media business that you're in pretty much travels on, right? There's no location basis to what you're doing. But what do you think happens in New York City? What do you think happens to society with spacing and such? I'm sure you've thought about this and come up with some view of where you think we land.
Yeah, I think about it all the time. I moved to New York City because I had this sociology professor in college who, and sociology is obviously like the study of people in groups. And he said, he had one line and it was really like one of the biggest things that stuck with me coming out of college, which was that every person in their life should live in New York City for 6 months. Like whether you love it or you hate it, or I was from a very rural small town. Like I didn't come from anything. Like New York City scared the shit out of me, but I basically never left. So I think something really interesting is happening. One is, I think it's very unnatural for people to be this alone. I think it's very unnatural. I don't like it. I think the monotony of every day being the same, I think the confinement is very hard. And I think people are craving connection to one another. And while, yes, like the virtualness of it can solve for some of it, it really doesn't solve it. I think that there is going to be an explosion of people wanting to get back out in the world. Like the minute, you know, I think the hardest thing that I've think about is it's going to be hard to maintain the distancing. Like you're from the restaurant business. Like, John, the minute I can go to a bar or a restaurant, like, I will be in that bar in that restaurant. I can't wait. I cannot wait to go to a bar. I cannot wait.
You know, it's interesting. A month ago, I'm not sure people quite felt that way, but now they're ready.
I agree. I think we've gone through these phases of disbelief, of immense personal panic about your health. Like, am I going to get this thing, where everyone wanted to be home and you were buying, I was buying like cleaning supplies. I don't think I would ever, like, I was panicked about cleaning supplies. Then I think kind of, there's a depression that settles in, or just like the status quo settles in. And I think now, you know, people have kind of evolved to two things, which is a very big fear about the economy and livelihood and income and really like your personal finances. And I think the second thing is people are just craving being back in the world. And I think the thing that will be different is, I think young people will go out in droves. I think it will be very hard to maintain social distance. I just don't think it's natural. And I think older people, it's going to take them a while to come back. So what I think that means is, if you look at businesses that are dependent on, you know, let's say a 60 plus consumer being in that business, and that's going to be hard. I think if you have a business for 25-year-olds, they're going to come back.
Yeah. You know, I agree. I've sort of split it up in thirds in my mind. I think the first third of the population is that young third of the population that jumps right in. They can't wait. They're going to get to bars. They're going to get to restaurants. They're going to go out. They're going to play ball. They're going to do all the things that they want to do. The second third, I'm calling the reserved third.
Okay.
They're going to watch the actions of the first third. They want to make sure there's no surge in cases. They want to just watch it work for a week or two. And once they get comfortable, then they'll come out. Now we'll have two thirds. The third third, I call the certain third. They're not going out until they're certain that it's okay. Now, they're the older demo. They're also the more affluent demo, which affects retail and stores and all of that. They're going to want to see a vaccine. They're going to want to know that they're completely safe before they go out. So, and I'm rounding it out third, third, third. But I think
you're totally right.
I agree with so that first third gets us going. If we do a good job with that first third, meaning the restaurants operate safely and the stores operate safely, the second third is a natural. They will start to pile in. And then I think our economy starts to do okay. But, you know, Erica, you're pretty fashion conscious, because when I see you, I think that you're very fashion conscious in the clothes that you wear and the way you do it. But when you're sitting home, you have no reason to buy fashion.
At all.
You don't you don't need a new outfit right now. You don't need new shoes right now. So that... each third, when they go out now, they start buying clothes again. They start engaging in all sorts of retail. I'm concerned about that third third, because they so impact the industry. Can I say hi? Can I say hello?
Sure, you want to say hi? Come say hi. You want to say hi?
Hi.
Okay.
I'm John. What's your name?
This is John. Do you want to say hi? Tell them what your name is.
Karen.
Hi. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Okay.
You guys doing okay?
35. We're hanging in. We want to know what 6 times 7 is.
Uh-huh.
but yeah, I agree with you. Like, I was reading something that in terms of fashion sales, tops are selling.
Because that's what everybody sees.
So it's like everybody wants a different outfit for their Zoom, but that's basically it.
You know, it's funny. Years ago, I used to get a kick out of Dave Letterman, who wore a beautiful jacket and a tie. Mm-hmm. And then when he stood up, he was wearing, you know, torn up jeans and sneakers, right? So I wonder, because I'm sitting here in a pair of shorts right now. So I've got a shirt on.
That's right. Like, who cares at the bottom?
Yeah. So I'm crazy doing interviews these past few weeks. So I'm wearing a suit with shorts underneath. Everything is waist up right now.
Totally. Everything is waist up. That and scarves and hats, I think, are going to sell. You're going to be selling so many scarves and hats.
Yeah. You have a positive outlook going forward, don't you?
Very positive.
You think our economy bounces back? It takes a little while, but I think it does. Do you?
I think you know, like, I'm an American. Like, this is like adversity hits and like Americans just get after it. And I'm so optimistic. I think things are going to change. I don't want to spend personally, I think it's very depressing to think about change negatively. You know, it was like after 9/11 happened, you know what I mean? Like 9/11 was horrible. It was horrible in New York City. And then all of a sudden you had to show your ID everywhere. And getting through an airport was far more difficult and far more arduous. And it was a pain in the ass, but you understood why you had to go through all the steps in the
airport.
And we dealt with it. Mm-hmm. And you moved on and like, that's now normal. So I feel like it's going to take a little bit of time, but I think our country is strong. You know, I look at it for our company, right? Like if I were to use the analogy of what we're doing in our company, is that my feeling is that I have to look at this as a gift. Like there are things that we can do right now, which will set us up to be stronger in the future. And those things are, you know, changing the way we make money or changing the way we approach our partners or, you know, and Dave's done this too from the content perspective. You know, he started day trading. He's mm-hmm. doing unboxing. He's doing like humans are highly adaptable. Companies are highly adaptable. And I think countries can be highly adaptable. And I believe if you have the best minds in this country, politics aside and the bullshit aside, like, they're going to figure it out. Like they're going to figure out.
I agree. I agree.
Figure out the business.
I think right now, this is the time when great marketers bubble to the top. Great promoters bubble to the top.
Yeah, I agree.
Great operators bubble to the top. Great ideas bubble to the top. And you know, I think this is a time for people like that to shine. So I'm with you. You know, I am feeling pretty optimistic about where we can go now. Now we've got to get this medical situation under control, but we're Americans. And we've dealt with this adversity and these struggles our whole lives, personally as well as in cities and areas of our country. So I'm like you. I'm looking forward to the end of this. And I think when this pandemic ends, there's a whole new set of opportunities that begin.
Totally.
And, you know, Erica, I've always said, being a little older than you, a few years, you know, I come back from the world where meeting a female CEO like you was very rare. There just weren't a lot of you guys out there. And
there's,
you know, yes, but you know, watching you come into this man's world, to this disorganized machine, pulling it together, developing the credibility that you have, and everybody loves you there. People think the world of you.
I love them.
I have incredible respect for you, Eric. I think you're terrific. I think, you know, watching you run the company, watching you develop with the friendship that we've created these past couple of years, I'm proud to call you my friend, and I can't wait to see what you do with Barstool these next couple of years.
Thank you. I can't wait to see you soon. I hope you come back and see us the minute you can.
Of course.
We love you. We learn so much from you. You give us this jolt. I remember you had come in one time and everyone started whispering to me of like, John Tapper's here. And there'd be like a little rumbling around the office because, you know, at that point in time, we didn't get a lot of guests. There weren't like athletes and celebrities rolling around. It was like, John Tapper's here. And everybody sits up a little straighter and like walks a little bit more upright and like straightens up their sweatpants or whatever, you know, whatever they were wearing. And I remember a couple of them had read your book. And the big debate was if they could ask you if you would sign it. And it was just very fun. It was cool. You were like one of the first people who had embraced, obviously, Dan and Dave from the very beginning. And we look up to you in terms of how you've run your businesses and how you think about the world. And I think that's partly also what just makes us such a vibrant company is we just always want to learn from people like you. And, you know, we want you to tell us what we're doing right and what we're doing wrong. So I'm really appreciative of that.
Well, it's like family when I go there. And you guys are pretty good at beating people up, but I never get beat up by Barstool, which is wonderful because I feel like it's family when I'm there, every one of them. And you're a big part of it, Erica. This was a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. You know, when this pandemic is all over in a few months, I'd love to bring you back. And let's have a little post-pandemic conversation and see where the industry is going as well.
I can't wait.
Same here. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Good to see you.
Don't shut down this podcast. John Taffer will be right back.
Oh, boy, that was fun. You know, a little positiveness goes a long way right now. Erica is bullish on the future. She feels people are going to go back to work. It's going to be an exciting time. You know, every day I agree with her more and more. I think that we're moving in the right direction. I think we are going to come out of this with some energy. And I think people are going to be excited to be back. And I can't wait to see it happen. And it's starting right now. Wisconsin, Texas, Georgia, they're starting to open up this great opportunity. So here's what we need to do. We need to be safe. We need to respect social distancing. We need to wear our masks. We need to protect the fact that we're opening up now. We don't want to close up again. We don't want to have surges. So together, we have to manage this opening, and we can do it. If we're respectful of each other, distancing, masks, washing our hands, all the things we've heard 1,000 times the past 2 months, together, we can make this reopening work. I want you to support our businesses. Please, tonight, call a restaurant for a delivery if you can. Please call a restaurant for delivery if you can. If we all do that tonight, all of us, everybody listening, we can make an impact tonight just by ordering food from a restaurant. And if you can order a gift card, please do that. And if you're going to buy a gift card from your local restaurant, which is very important, please go to shift4cares.com. At shift4cares, shift4cares.com. If you go to that site, you can buy a gift card at any of your local restaurants, and a restaurant gets another 5% on top of what you spend. So if you're going to buy gift cards, please do it through shift4cares.com. Please go to the National Restaurant Association site and support the employee funds if you can. And please look at those companies that are supporting our industry, that are donating and stepping up. Let's support the products that are supporting us. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you all next week. Let's hang in there. Things are getting better. Together, we will shut this down. Talk to you next week.
Subscribe to the John Tapper Podcast right now for more episodes every Thursday.